Welcome to this episode of Lil Dude's Insect Academy, where we discover more about the extremely diverse world of entomology with your host, Braden Coy. All right, guys, welcome to episode 42 of this podcast. This week I have a bonus episode for you guys. It's part two of the Jack interview, Jack's World of Wildlife interview. I hope you guys enjoyed last episode. If you haven't listened to part one, definitely go check that out. That was the most recent last episode. And this is part two. Hope you enjoy.
Sure. My in particular, not just, again, preaching to the choir about all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So where did you go to school?
I was actually homeschooled out of fourth grade. So I did elementary up until fourth grade, and
yeah,
I was
so
like,
I
hate it here. So I came home, and for middle school, I was totally homeschooled, and that really opened up a lot of opportunity for me. I was able to volunteer at a natural history museum by my house. And I was able to run a bug exhibit for a number of years as a middle school student, which was great. Nobody else was quite as excited to run the bug exhibit as I was. And nobody else could name all the bugs there, right? So
yeah, I can relate.
I did that for a while. And then in high school, I kind of, bounced around some private schools, and I did some dual credit at community college. As far as college goes, I took a gap year to travel. So for that first year, that's when I did that internship in Costa Rica. That's when I did my trip to Australia. And then when I got back, I decided that I wasn't really looking to go back to school. I had a few credit hours from high school doing dual credit.
Yeah.
And so I just started working full time to pay for trips and things like that. And then when I got back from Thailand, I was working for a bit, and then I went back to school, and I picked up a few more credits, and I was like, really, it's hard for me to justify going to school for what I'd like to go to school for, because it's like, oh, great, I get to, read about the barrier reef this semester.
Yeah.
Currently, while it's bleaching, while it's dying, and I could go and see it right now. Mm-hmm. I could work for 2 months and then spend a month, out there filming on the barrier reef before it's gone. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I've had to struggle with. And then right now I've been working on, I started a new business, which is kind of out of Jack's World of Wildlife. It's called Jack's World of Wildlife's Premium Custom Enclosures. And so what I do is I set up vivariums, which are these live planted tanks, and I fill them with dart frogs. And it's kind of a way to bring the jungle, in. And it's been something that's pretty cathartic for me because, being so far removed for longer periods of time, I always hate when people are like, oh, I love to travel. My home is everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Take my shoes off and run barefoot down the beach. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. But I mean, it's something that I didn't realize was just kind of starting to grow inside of me, that it was something that was very important for me to be doing, and something that was becoming kind of a part of who I was to just travel and experience and learn. So I may go back and pick up a few more courses, but right now I'm working that business and trying to get some money together to, continue doing what I do. I'm hoping one video, I've gotten bitten by a black widow to dispel myths about that, brown recluse to dispel myths about that. And a lot of these videos still have a lot of traction and people are still watching them regularly. And they still come out pretty high up on the list when you search for them. So I'm just kind of counting the days until something gets picked up or kicked up and can help kind of jumpstart the channel into becoming more of a, at least self-sustained. If I could have the channel pay for all the trips, for the equipment, for the recording of the videos, that would be my ideal situation. I don't need to make money off of this. And in fact, I said, one of my big things was if I started making a lot of money off of this, a vast amount of that is going to go straight towards conservation efforts, straight towards that type of stuff, because I truly believe in the mission, and I'm not trying to, just be some guy that's going to just use this sort of boohoo sob story, the planet is not doing so well, to just line my pockets. It would be great if it could be a job for me. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I'm making more than I need, there's no reason for me to keep that excess. And so I really, really would like to get it to the point, not only where I could do it a lot easier and do it with a lot more, you know, kind of easily planable stuff and have more kind of guest people on, you know, real biologists, real people out in the world that are actually doing conservation work. Cause some of this stuff that I'd like to go and do and film is the funding goes straight to conservation, but things like, you know, the impenetrable forest in Uganda and going and filming, you know, mountain gorillas. Oh my gosh, that'd be a dream.
But it's like
a $6,000 package. And for a week out there, you know, and it's stuff like that where I would love to be able to support that. And I'd love to be able to, you know, put my money towards something that, you know, not only is an awesome experience and a great, you know, opportunity to film and bring that to the people at home, but to directly impact, you know, the conservation efforts there. But it's just something I cannot financially justify at this time. And it's certain things like that where it's like, I would love to go and support, rent out a whole, you know, tour group's worth of, you know, people to get out there and film. But it's just something that, you know, is not quite as easily doable without that funding. And the funding may never come. And that's fine. Again, I'm here to try and do my best. I don't want to get to the end of my life and be like, yeah, kids, you know, elephants used to be great. They used to be all over, you know, orangutans are beautiful. I saw some, they're not here anymore. But I tried a little bit in my earlier years to let people know that they were all going extinct.
Now
it's just like, yeah, you know, what can you do? You know, I just don't want to get to that point. We're here for such a short time. It's the longest thing we do and the shortest thing we do. And, I just figured I might as well try and, you know, do my best and raise some awareness and save some animals if I can.
Yeah, definitely. That really speaks to me, I think.
Yeah.
So another question that I really like to ask my guests, I guess, is what are some, so I know your main thing is your Jack's World Wildlife business and your other things. And, but what are some other hobbies that might not be related to that at all?
Like I said, I did a lot of theater. I did musical theater for a few years. So that's something I'm actually thinking about incorporating is writing some songs, like, you know, some environmental kind of centered songs and film some music videos or something fun like that. Because I think that would do really well, and songs get stuck in people's heads, and that's a whole platform to get people interested. But I can sing very well. I also, I can play the bagpipes. I've played a few funerals.
Awesome.
I play the Highland bagpipes. I play quite a few instruments, pretty musical, but yeah, mostly it's all animal stuff. The business that was kind of a hobby that grew into a business. It became, a little more lucrative than I had originally thought it was going to be. And so I decided to go ahead and, you know, get my LLC and get all my stuff together. And I'm a Texas owned and operated business now. But that stemmed from me, you know, kind of keeping these mini ecosystems. I did fish for a long time, freshwater and saltwater reef tanks, which are expensive as heck to maintain. And so the vivariums are kind of similar, you know, because you have the plants and you have your little microfauna and, you know, your species that's in the tank. And so you can kind of have that same feel without dumping, you know, $100 worth of calcium and, you know, potassium and all these different chemicals in there for the corals and stuff to eat and absorb. But, for the most part, it's been animals all the way. I dabbled in some artwork. I dabbled in, playing instruments, but nothing really has excited me on the same level. It's always had something to do with animals, with wildlife, and in that type of realm.
I've wanted to put together one of those vivariums. They seem really cool. Frogs and stuff. Because those are just so cool to me. Like, it's like a slice of the Amazon right in your
exactly head. It's just so fun to watch them kind of hop around. I keep entirely Ufaga genus dart frogs. And so what I really like about those is that if you keep them properly and properly supplemented and everything, they raise their own babies. I don't have to pull the tadpoles out and take care of them. They feed them on infertile eggs. And so I really love that because it's pretty much like I open the cage to maybe spray water in there or feed them, and everything else, they would live exactly how they would live in the wild.
That's
and I provide them all the places to lay their eggs, to raise their tadpoles. They raise them in the water cups of bromeliads, which are those kind of cup-shaped epiphyte plants that'll grow on trees and throughout the neotropics. And they raise their tadpoles in there, and then they hop on out, and then I've got a whole slew of new frogs to, you know, take care of or sell or trade. So cool. And it's really fun, really rewarding. And then two, what I really, really like is that they're ethically sourced. My expensive ones are sourced and imported from, or exported, I should say, from Colombia. And there's this company that is actually working to conserve their habitat. And so what they do is they have hermits to capture wild adults, breed them, release the adults, and retain the offspring to sell to fund conservation efforts. And so they're actually actively saving some of these species from extinction because of heavy trafficking. Because dart frogs are an easy target for animal traffickers and smugglers, because some of the frogs I've got are worth, you know, $1,200,
$1,500.
Oh, yeah. And so a smuggler can come in, you know, get a duffel bag, you know, 30 frogs and make, you know, 50 grand, you know, back in Germany or wherever they take them to. And so what happens is these isolated, you know, little areas, some of these frog locales, different color morphs, you know, exist in, you know, a few hectares of rainforest. And so if somebody came in and collected, you know, 30, 40, 50 adult frogs, that could be a large portion of the breeding population. And that has caused a ton of these beautiful locales and morphs of frogs to become endangered, sometimes critically so. Not to mention all the risks from, you know, chytrid fungus and all the other environmental hazards that happen to amphibians.
Yeah.
But dart frogs in particular, smuggling is a big issue. And so what I really like is not only can I have a little piece of the rainforest, but I'm actively helping fund, you know, rainforest conservation by buying, you know, these premium Ufaga histrionica dart frogs, these harlequin dart frogs, because that's thousands of dollars that goes towards, you know, not only their breeding and reintroduction, but also buying more land to protect
really
it.
That's really cool.
So it's kind of like, you know, everything kind of, you know, melds together and is kind of all interconnected, a lot of my stuff. I mean, conservation-centered is what I try and stay on brand with, because I mean, what else are we doing if we're not taking care of what we got?
That's really cool how that works.
It's and that's one of my, you know, I love to brag about that, because people, you know, because there's, I try and keep my channel as neutral as possible with animals being in captivity and stuff like that. That could be a touchy subject for people. Animals in captivity, trophy hunting, and there's all these types of aspects that go into animal conservation. It's really sad, but I mean, hunting seasons brought out American alligators back from the brink of extinction. They were in danger because they were being poached illegally. And then when we said, no, it's illegal to take these alligators except during approved hunting seasons. And then the money that they made from those tags being purchased, they used to conserve wildlife parks and to put back into alligator conservation. And now alligators are of least concern. And filling back into their historic populations. And so it's difficult for some people to kind of get with the program of, you know, sometimes animals are being killed regardless. And sometimes there's certain methods where, you know, applying a hunting season or, you know, a limited amount of, you know, harvest can actually directly fund the rehabilitation of an entire species or ecosystem. But again, that's super, a lot of people are touchy on that. So I try and keep it very neutral on the channel. But I think I will actually showcase my frog room here again, because of that, you know, you're actively supporting conservation efforts and it's all real line specific. So you can't like hybridize or crossbreed these frogs. So theoretically, if you needed to, you could take from the captive population and reintroduce exactly where they came from, because they are traced perfectly genetically from one single spot. Mm-hmm. So let's say that rainforest was leveled illegally. If they replanted it, let it grow in for 50 years, the captive hobby in the US and Europe could theoretically reintroduce all the frogs of that locale back into the area. And so it's kind of like you have this sort of genetic storage in a way, because it's very line specific, and you know, the species and locales are traceable back to the exact, you know, point of their origin. So it's really cool in that regard, because you're kind of like, you know, keeping species from extinction, regardless of what could happen to their environment.
Yeah, yeah.
Frogs are an really easy cool thing to reintroduce.
Yeah.
If you got trees and bromeliads and some food, that'd be good.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, yeah, so you mentioned some of your, I guess, your heroes or some people that you look up to. But what are some, like Steve Irwin, of course. So who are some, I guess, your role models or people that you look up to, I guess?
For sure. I think as a kid, yeah, definitely Steve Irwin, Jeff Corwin were two big ones that I regularly watched. I think as I've grown older, you know, I try not to watch as much of their stuff or listen to as many stories about them, because, you know, they say don't meet your heroes and nobody's perfect. And I've heard, you know, conflicting things about both of those gentlemen. But to me, you know, those are some of my biggest inspirations. I would say another huge one has been David Attenborough. I would say on the list of people I could meet, that the top of the list would be David Attenborough. I mean, a man who has devoted his life to conservation, who's devoted his life to being a weathered naturalist, a warrior for wildlife.
Absolutely.
I have the utmost respect for him. I think he is, you know, I mean, gosh, if I could pick the president, I'd be David Attenborough. We make an exception, you know, a British-born man be the president of the United States, or at least emperor of the world or something like that along those lines.
Yeah.
I think he has definitely, I mean, I find myself rewatching so much of the content that he's in, just trying to find ways I can better my, you know, representation of wildlife and better how I'm, you know, creating these educational videos, because I do glean a lot of, influence specifically from him and from Jeff Corwin especially. I really like the entertaining, the playful approach, but also the professionalism. And of course, I love Steve. I love Steve Irwin. Loved him as a kid. Love him now.
Yeah.
But some of his videos were crazy. And so I try and stick closer to the Jeff Corwin, the David Attenborough type message, kind of atmosphere. But you know, of course there's some of Steve in there too, inevitably. Yeah, I would say those are probably my top three. I'd be hard pressed to find somebody who could make it up to that, you know, top ring of influencers. But yeah, I think they're all really, really great, really great guys. And they've done a lot for, you know, not only public perception, but, you know, the environment as well.
I definitely agree with you on that. There's some really amazing figures out there, and there have
been Jane Goodall and Diane Fong.
Yeah.
I'll add them too.
I'm not
trying to be sexist or anything. I really Jane Goodall's work, I mean, I find myself, you know, I follow her on Instagram. I've read a lot of articles that she's put out. And I just think she's, I mean, just such an amazing scientist as well. And then Diane Fossey, she just did so much great work.
Absolutely.
And so those two, specifically with primates, primates hold a special part of my heart. I've not been able to work with nearly as many as I would like to, specifically the great apes. I just am so fascinated. And I love their work. I love reading about stuff that they've done. So I would say, yeah, those top five, that's the top tier. If you get to that place, you're in good company.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah, so, I mean, I think we're pretty much done. I do want to ask one more question, but...
Oh, go for it. I don't have anything else to do today.
Yeah, that one more question.
It's a long podcast special, you know. Make sure everybody goes and subscribes, you know. If you listen to me talk for this long, you probably will like my videos.
Yeah, definitely. One more question relating your stuff.
Yeah.
What you've done in the past, sort of. So you've been stung by a lot of insects, right?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So how many have you been stung by, like, on your channel? I mean.
Oh gosh, let me count. I probably have to start from the beginning. So it was tarantula hawk, giant tarantula hawk in Costa Rica, bullet ant, two species of Myrmecia. I'll count them both separately in Australia. A blue bottle wasp in Australia. It's like a flightless wasp in Australia. And then let me think. Then we had Vespa tropica, graded banded hornet, giant Asian forest scorpion, brown recluse, black widow, tarantula hawk again, different species, Polistes carolina red paper wasp, Pagana myrmex rugosus, Pachycondyla harpax, both ants. That may be it. That's at 13. So quite a few animals have bitten or stung me over the years. Mm-hmm. Not any that I was, I was impressed by Vespa tropica, but I was not, you know, kind of kicked down with that one. I have yet to find an animal that has made me just roll around and scream on the ground, which is surprisingly what people think should happen. And people love to remind me I should be doing on my videos is being overly dramatic and, you know, lying to them. They would rather see me, you know, follow suit with some of the other people posting sting videos than actually get an honest reaction. They love to tell me it's fake. They say, this is fake. And I'm like, how do you know? And they say, that's the most, you know, painful ant sting on the planet. You know, you should be rolling around and crying. And I said, okay.
It should knock the wind out of you, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, have you tried it? And they're like, no, I watched one other person do it. And that's how they reacted. So that's my... that's my absolute, you know, fact for how that type of stuff should go. And I'm like,
that is crazy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I get all sorts of hate comments and all sorts of stuff just from me representing stuff in a truthful light, because it does it.
Not being dramatic enough. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And it kind of makes other people seem like they've been lying this whole time, which in my opinion, you know, plenty of people have lied about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So which one was sort of the most underwhelming?
Underwhelming. Gosh. The tarantula hawk, the big one in Costa Rica. I don't know what went on with that one. I have actually kind of started noticing a pattern in montane hymenopteran. So species of ants, bees, and wasps that are up in altitude. For some reason, I've been stung by, you know, similar species or same genera of insects, and they hurt dramatically worse in the lowlands. And I have no idea what causes this, if it's the altitude, if it's the temperature. It's quite cold on average in Monteverde, which is where we found that tarantula hawk. But it was a massive, massive, massive female. Different species than what we have up here in the American Southwest and in the South. But it was huge. And I got so many people saying, oh, it was a male. Okay, first off, males have no reason to get that large. That's why females are so much larger, is to subdue tarantulas. And we had caught it earlier that day, and I was expecting it to hurt so bad. You'll notice if you watch the original tarantula hawk wasp sting gone wrong, I used some clickbait there. It went wrong. It didn't hurt. I sting my friend first, because I was like, gosh, this is going to hurt a lot. I want him to get, you know, the brunt of it. And he was like, just like taking it. And I was like, huh. I guess it can't hurt that bad, but he's kind of weird. You know, he stings himself with stinging, you know, caterpillars and things like that. He does a lot of lepidoptery, whatever, magic, odds and whatnot. And so I go to sting myself, and it was so underwhelming. And I was like, this is like, you know, an ant sting. This is, and I ended up having some bruising under the skin, which I started including the aftermath of the stings, because I thought, in my mind, because I don't watch anybody else's like animal videos. I don't want to copy anybody else, whether that be intentional or subconscious. I don't want to kind of just copy what other people are doing. So I don't copy anybody's stuff. I've seen clips here and there of some of the people who are real popular doing stuff right now. But I, as a point, I make it not to watch any of my competitors' videos or people who I would like to be competitors in the future.
Yeah.
Once I get over, a you know, 7,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very underwhelming. I would say another one was Brown Recluse.
That was underwhelming.
Yeah, did not hurt at all. And I was I mean, I knew that the Venom wasn't going to do anything because I was already studying the composition and the chemical properties of the Venom, and it just does not do what people think it does. And so I already was expecting that. And I had some, you know, antibiotic cream that I washed the bite off, put some cream on there. And I had some mild kind of lymphangitis where you get some bacteria in the lymphatic system. Mm. But it was really mild. I was very surprised. Those two were definitely the most underwhelming. Everything else hurt. Everything else I've been, you know, either disappointed by or mildly disappointed by, but underwhelming, like where to the point where you're confused, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely the tarantula hawk for sure in Costa Rica.
Okay.
So I was like, this is like a 4-inch wasp. There's no way this thing is not going to just like, I mean, my friend who's in the video, he went and changed into shorts just in case we were going to be rolling around on the ground. You know, he didn't want to get his pants dirty. Mm-hmm. So we were like really bracing ourselves. And then it was just so anticlimactic.
Yeah. 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 I mean, so which one was the most painful then?
Oh gosh. Well, I separate them out because these two deserve their own category. Vespa Tropica, the Grated Vander Hornet, definitely has hurt the most to date. Mm-hmm. That one, I qualify it as really, really hurting me when I do something involuntary. And I did yell when I was stung by that one. And that's not usually something I will do. I don't try and kind of make it seem like the sting doesn't hurt as much as it does, but I like to
try to contain,
compose myself and talk about what's happening because, you know, if it's not going to force me to lay down and scream, I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. But that one, I was like, immediate bam. It was really hurting me. And then as far as the most painful experience I've had to date, got to go to the Black Widow. So I made the mistake with the Brown Recluse. I really held it on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Widows, typically their defensive bite is a pinch and release. And their venom is so potent that just the tiniest injection, you know, really, really, you know, puts you on your ass.
Yeah.
And so what I did was we had this adult female, but she hadn't fed. And I didn't want to feed her, because then her abdomen would be, you know, pretty taut and swollen with food, and it could easily rupture or pop during the bite test.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave her some water, let her kind of hydrate, and then we went to try out the bite. But I held her on for a long time, giving me about, you know, 2 or 3, maybe even 4 times the amount of a defensive bite. Venom-wise. And I took it off of my arm, and my cameraman, who's been bitten, you know, warning bites before from Black Widows, goes, "Oh man, that's gonna be bad." And I'm like, "Why didn't you stop me?" He goes, "Well, I was just so shocked behind the camera." And I'm like, "Well, great." And so for the first, you know, 2 hours, I'm like, "Well, you know, it's not really hurting me as much." I was up for 11 hours that night.
Oh my god!
Just I could not sleep. I could not rest. And I never take painkillers for a bite. I took 3 ibuprofen, and then come to find out that the type of neurotoxin that they use, it's such a powerful neurotoxin, you need actual like neuro blocking painkillers, like prescription painkillers to do that. Yeah. And my buddy had one left over from a prescription, and I couldn't take it because I had already taken 3 ibuprofen. And if I would have taken another painkiller, you know, I could have shot my liver. I could have run into all sorts of other problems.
Yeah, yeah.
My kidneys are already in overdrive processing this venom. So I just had to just chug water and chug water. I ran 2 baths because it feels like your spine is being like just crushed into itself. Like you jumped off a 5-story building and landed on your ass, like just jarred your spine. It felt like I just needed gravity to just give me a break. And so that's why I ran the bath. Well, then once you get in there, you remember, this is all neurotoxin. This is just telling my brain how much it hurts. I'm not actually, like, my spine isn't actually just fusing together right now. It's the neurotoxin telling my brain that. So there was no relief, nothing I could do, no way I could lay. It hurt to sit up, it hurt to stand up, it hurt to walk, it hurt to lay down. It was just so terrible. And I'm really interested in trying the bullet ant glove ritual in Brazil.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And once that opens up, that's something I'm totally interested in doing, but I think it's going to be similar because, you know, 200 bullet ant stings, that's a powerful neurotoxin. Uh-huh. And that's gonna concentrate in the lower back, that's gonna concentrate by the kidneys, that's gonna be abdominal pain. And I think it's gonna be similar. So I'm not looking forward to that. I'm probably gonna bring a painkiller or two for that.
Yeah.
Just in case, because I need to sleep.
Have you been stung by a single bullet ant yet?
Yes, I have. So okay. I did that in Costa Rica. Okay. And that was no sweat. It lasted for a long time, longer than any other ant sting I've ever had. Definitely hurt, but I could have taken, you know, 10 bullet ant stings at that time. And I may go back and do, you know, more, but I think if I were to do another bullet ant sting, it would be, queens are pretty easy to find because they're semi-claustral, so they come out to forage for food while they're laying eggs and raising larvae to start a nest. So they're actually wandering quite a bit for a large part of the year after they fly out and mate and start their own colony. Mm-hmm. So I might do like, oh, a bullet ant queen's stinging me. Oh, it's, you know, 20% larger than a, you know, bullet ant worker.
Yeah.
But I really would like to do the glove challenge because I wouldn't mind redoing the whole thing because bullet ants are one of my absolute favorite species of insects on the planet. I love them. They're a monotypic genus. There's not really anything else that's really closely related to them. So I was a big ant nerd 2016, 2017, you know, and I just love seeing them in the wild. And I would love to, you know, do a longer, more in-depth video of them because that was right when we were starting to figure out exactly what kind of videos we were wanting to produce and exactly how we were doing them. So, you know, it's not exactly where I'd like it to be. And that's something I really wouldn't mind doing because that's, again, one of my favorite species. I love hanging out with those ants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, I think we're just about done here with Jack. All right, Jack. So just let my viewers know where they can learn more about Jack's World of Wildlife. You know, your YouTube channel, maybe social media.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Website maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I own the website domain. I have not put it together. So where you can learn more stuff now is on YouTube. Jack's World of Wildlife is what my YouTube is called. If you search that up, you should find it. If you want to get really specific, it's capital J, capital W, and then capital W. The O is lowercase, and there's apostrophe S after Jack. And then you can also follow me on Instagram at Jack's World of Wildlife, all one word. That's all lowercase. And then we have a Facebook page as well, which is Jack's World of Wildlife, same as the YouTube channel. I try and post every day on the Instagram. I'm really trying to post every day on YouTube. I don't have a video scheduled for tomorrow, but I'm going to try and whack one out this evening and have it ready. But, you know, nobody quote me on that. I'm trying to get one out every Saturday. I would like to have a video out. So
very cool.
Like, comment, subscribe, turn on your post notifications, all that jargon. But, it's been great talking and just, you know, spewing all this information. I know we said 30 minutes. I think it's been like an hour 15 or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
But it's all good stuff.
No big deal.
One hour long special, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you guys made it this far, then you might as well.
Congrats.
You might as well just go subscribe to Jack then. I mean, really.
I could talk forever about this stuff. Yeah, so if you haven't fallen asleep yet, guys, you're more than welcome to try and see how many videos you can get through before being lulled into a
all right. State. All right, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this talk with Jack. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jack.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, guys. So if you listen to all this episode and all of last episode, you get a gold star. Really, I mean, I bet you learned all kinds of stuff about Jack and what he's working on. But yeah, if you enjoyed this, then definitely go check him out. I have all of his links in the show notes of this episode. If you guys listen to both of these episodes, you guys must be big fans. So definitely go check all the work he's doing out on his YouTube. All the stuff, I have that linked below again. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this. I had a blast talking with Jack. And yeah, I can't wait to see what he does next. So yeah. I hope you guys enjoyed learning about all the crazy stings he's done and bites. I would never voluntarily do that kind of stuff, but I mean, it's for education and it's for the greater good of what he's working on. So yeah, he's really brave for doing that. So yeah, definitely go check him out. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. So yeah, I actually have an interview lined up for next week as well. So yeah, we've had 3 episodes in a row, so that's pretty awesome. This was sort of just a bonus episode for you guys to enjoy. But yeah, I have an interview lined up for you guys next week to enjoy as well. And so I can't wait for you guys to listen to that. So yeah, I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. If you enjoyed this episode of Little Dude's Insect Academy, then consider subscribing to my channel and sharing this episode with one of your friends. You can even support me financially through my Patreon, which has a link in the description. Thanks for listening, and as always, keep on bugging.